When Nehemiah led the Israelites to reconstruct the massive wall around their city, he knew his job was not finished once the bricks were laid and the mortar had dried. His job would be incomplete until he led the people back into the city of David, where they would take up residence together. Today on Insight for Living, we'll see that Nehemiah called on a quiet and courageous group of people to help lead this campaign. These selfless leaders didn't need accolades or public fanfare. Chuck calls them the Willing Unknowns.
In the 11th chapter of Nehemiah, we have the crosses of unknown and, if you please, unpronounceable names of men who will never be remembered because of their names or even their significance. But they form and frame one massive force that, in my opinion, make the Word of God so exciting. As a matter of fact, I have saved up in these last few weeks chapter 7 for today's message, because it lays the background to chapter 11. Look quickly with me back to the background, if you will. Verse 1, it came about when the wall was rebuilt. The city was large and spacious, but the people in it were few, and the houses were not built. Why weren't there people in the city of Jerusalem? Well, a couple of reasons. First of all, the city had had no wall for 160 years. A city without walls would be like today a house without lock and keys. Another reason is because if you moved into the city, you had a lot of rubble to clear out. And frankly, it's a lot easier to build a home on a plain piece of land than to push and pull out all the stones of yesterday, the stumps and the charred remains of a destruction of years ago. Well, the question in my mind today and in yours is, how did they get people into the city? Two methods. Look at chapter 11. Did anybody live in Jerusalem? Yeah. Members of the Chamber of Commerce did. The leaders of the people lived in Jerusalem. They had to. You know, that was part of the job. So how did they get the people in the city? First, they cast lots to bring 1 out of 10 to live in Jerusalem, the holy city, while 9/10 remained in the other cities. One of the ways that God led his people in making decisions was the tangible method of casting lots. And so they went through this interesting process, and God divinely worked over the casting of lots so that 1/10 of the people moved out of the suburbs into the city. They weren't volunteers. They were forced. And so they uprooted and they moved. But the second method is what interests us today. Verse 2. And the people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. Now, that's not the same as verse 1. Verse 1 did not include volunteers. If the lot fell on you and your family, 1 out of 10, you moved back into the city and you started over. Now, among the 9/10 that remained outside the wall, there were some who were strangely moved of God on the inside to give themselves to urban dwelling. What makes it significant to me is this word that is translated volunteered. It's a Hebrew word, nadab, which means to impel, to incite from within. Can you imagine it? They living in the suburbs, pinpointed by God's finger to move from that lovely dwelling into the city to start over. They willingly, generously did it. You know what is of interest to me is that there is hardly a name mentioned of all of those people that moved into the city. Someone has done a rather intricate work of calculation, and they came up with somewhere probably in the vicinity of a million or more surrounding that city. And so a number of these people moved by force, but a large number moved because they were impelled from within. They became, if you would use my term this morning, among the willing unknowns. Before I go any further, let me help clarify the meaning of this word volunteered. It is used several times in the Old Testament. We won't turn, but just it will help you build a case in your mind for the significance of it. If you were to look into Exodus chapter 35, you would find a group of people who were skilled in craftsmanship, workmanship, embroidery, weaving, and whatever, to the putting together of the tabernacle, that elaborate and beautiful portable church in the days of Moses. And Exodus 35 refers to those who willingly gave of their substance, of their talent, their service for the things of God. And so that word Nadab appears. They volunteered that to God. Not a name is remembered. If your life depended on it, no matter how deep a student of the Bible, you would have great difficulty remembering one craftsman from the days of the tabernacle. It's planned that way, you see. Willing unknowns never have their name in the lights. You travel on to Judges chapter 5, you find another group of people. Right after battle, Deborah and Barak sing a song in honor of the willing unknowns who volunteered for military service and voluntarily, in some cases, gave of their lives that the nation Israel might be sustained. So it has reference to military service. It's used again in 1 Chronicles 29 for David when he laid the groundwork for the building up of the temple in Solomon's day. And the scripture says that there were those who willingly, and then it describes them, set aside certain possessions for the temple when it would be built. They were impelled from within. Now, so much for Exodus and Judges and Chronicles. Our interest is Nehemiah 11. I find five specific groups that willingly gave something, even though they would remain unknown for the giving of it. Look at the first group. We've just read about them. The people blessed all the men who volunteered to live in Jerusalem. Group number one were those who willingly moved into the city. Now, as you read that second verse, you might think, well, what's such a great thing about that? Well, if you ask that, you haven't moved recently. You that have moved recently would have no problem identifying with the problems. What happens when you move? Well, you uproot all of your familiar settings, all of your family, all of your friends, all of your contacts, all the familiar scenery, and you actually go through a tremendous psychological change. Those that are engaged in the moving business tell me that. And I understand that the average American moves somewhere around 5 times. I think that's the figure in his lifetime. And some of us 12 to 15 times in the lifetime. Maybe my figures are a little low. But what happened? Well, they left their lovely home, pulled up their domestic roots, started from scratch, submitted themselves to a government they didn't elect, lived in a city that was policed by a group of people they didn't know. They began to seek for new employment, I take it. They had to redo the ground and just the physical manual labor of building a house. And in the process, keeping family alive and happy. There were those that seemed to be very insignificant if you hurry through the Bible, but they were very important because they became the new inhabitants of the city. There's another group. Skip over to verse 10 and pray for me as I try to get through these names, will you? Verse 10, from the priests, Jedaiah, the son of Joiarib, Jachin, Seraiah, the son of Hilkiah, the son of Meshulam, the son of Zadok, the son of Merayeth, the son of Ahitub. Thanks for praying. The leader of the house of God, and their kinsmen, notice, who performed the work of the temple, 822. I've heard people say, boy, this is the day of the big churches. Well, friend, that was a day of a rather sizable work itself. There were 822 who willingly worked within the temple. That's quite a staff. 822 people who volunteered themselves to the work of the house of worship. That's the second group. Those that moved into the area, and then there were those within the area who gave themselves willingly to the ministry within the temple. They faithfully supported the work with their talents and gifts. I take it from the way these names appear that none of them were well known, at least in history. I don't suppose they had ushers and TV technicians and lighting technicians and structural engineers, etc., etc., as we have today, but they had someone in that 822 that did very important jobs. This is a perfect place to stop and apply this. You know, we get the distinct impression that there was a sizable group of people, like an iceberg, very few of whom were represented in the eyes of the public, but most of whom were never seen or known by the congregation. I want to illustrate it in a rather earthy way. I want you all to look up at a gang of lights that's been added on your left, top side. If you're in the TV room, you can't appreciate it right now, but you will in the future. And on your left and on your right, there are lights. There are 4 on one side and 3 on the other. I don't know why, but if I were to have built it, it would have been 4 and 4, because that's the way I think. Then there's one back up here behind me. That's another one. I don't know why it's there, but it's there. Gang of lights. I took a crew of men to do that. Well, in the building of that light back here, there was a scaffolding work that had to go up, okay? And the scaffolding fell and hit the pulpit, which hit the communion table, and broke the glass into 1,000 pieces on top of the communion table. And this pulpit looked like Humpty Dumpty off the wall. Wow, it was in all sorts of pieces. So the fellow that broke it came over and he said, hey, something happened. So I walked over, and believe me, something had really happened. It was a mess. So that's no problem. We've got couple of 3 people that can handle that. So I made a phone call. Got a hold of an individual. I said, say, guess what? I want you to do an impossible task. Come over and I'll show you. He came. We looked at it. No problem. stuck it in a station wagon, off it went. Put it all together. Oh, and I might add, there was a wedding that next day, so this had to be cleaned up and had to be dovetailed with the scaffolding. And all the work together touched about 6, 7, 8 lives that were all working together voluntarily to make it work beautifully. Now, if I had put the pulpit together, I would have had to put a sign on it and say, "This is a pulpit." Because it doesn't resemble what used to look like a pulpit, but you couldn't even tell it. You didn't know any of that went on, did you, when you came last Sunday morning? There it was. Why? Because of the faithfulness of a few willing unknowns. How much different it would have been, by the way, if I had called my friend and said, "Say, something happened." "Yeah, what's that?" "Well, the pulpit has been broken into a number of pieces." "Who did it?" And I'd tell him, "Yeah, that same guy did those things before. I could have expected that same thing." He'd come over here and he'd say, "Oh, man, I couldn't touch that less than $150. Can't get to it for 2 weeks." You know, you get that from the commercial world these days. Can't get to it, can't possibly work on it. But he didn't do that. I called him up, no problem. He came over and I looked at this. I said, "Look at that, isn't that something?" "That's no problem. Dump it in the car." So he dumped it over there in the car, and off he went. Brought back a miracle. There it is. Skilled workmen willingly doing their thing. But you never read the names in the bulletin. You never even know the entire episode. And that goes on constantly. I made a list of the inner workings of this ministry, not counting the teaching ministry of the Sunday school or the music ministries, which often are in the lights. 17 inner workings that never make the headlines, ever. But I want you to know that I would be hard-pressed come Sunday if I were asked to cover all those bases. There's no way. You are comfortable because someone takes care of the heating and air conditioning. You enjoy it because last Sunday's mess is cleaned out between last Sunday and this Sunday. You ought to look over this place some Sunday night. It's an interesting appearance from the Sunday morning service when you first came in. Somebody has cleaned up. And on and on and on. There were those who willingly, yet unknown to the public, gave themselves to the inner ministry. There's another group. Verse 15. From the Levites. Verse 15 lists those Levites, which I will allow you to read on your own. From the leaders of the Levites. Verse 16 says, there were those who were in charge of the outside work of the house of God. Now, in those days, it didn't just mean those that landscaped, those that planted and trimmed and took care of the shrubbery, but those that ministered outside the house of God often were those that judged, those who handled civil affairs, those, in our terms, who counseled, who ministered to the public away from the place of worship. There were those who ministered outside the house of God, and you know what? You can't remember one of their names. It is almost as if God is saying, "I don't want you to remember their names." They're like those small white crosses, not to be remembered individually except by those families, but as a mass of individuals who made a mass of important things go right on without a hitch. These are the outer workings of the ministry. Let your mind drift to the outside, will you? What was one of the first things you noticed about this church? Well, if you were like me, you probably noticed the exterior. When I was driven to this place and began to look it over very carefully, the very first thing that was in my mind was, my, this place looks like a park. Somebody cares about details. Let's go to another group, the parking attendants. Remember those guys you throw stones at every once in a while? That group of fellas never get a dime for their labors, but faithfully, they're out there. Cool, heat, winter, summer. Now, come on in, park to your right, park to your left. Or, I'm sorry, it's full, and you have that beautiful attitude. That's fine, I'll drive on down, no problem. They work outside, don't they? Do you know one name? You don't know a name, do you? Year after year, that kind of ministry goes on. When's the last time you said to one of those fellas, say, thanks a million. You're here so that we can really enjoy it in there. How about the recording ministry? Ever been blessed by that ministry? Aside from one whose salary is taken care of by that ministry, the entire work is volunteer. The work of recording, transcribing, maintaining, the whole layout, volunteer. Ever asked to look up the fellow that does the taping and say, hey, let me tell you what that labor means over here.
We tend to overlook the quiet and humble workers around us, not unlike the Israelites of ancient days. And yet, those who serve us with humility and dignity certainly deserve recognition. You're listening to Insight for Living and a message from Chuck Swindoll titled, The Willing Unknowns. We'll hear an important closing comment from Chuck in just a moment, so please stay with us. To learn more about this ministry, visit us online at insightworld.org. Well, as a result of hearing today's Bible teaching, perhaps you're ready to learn more. Remember, in addition to this daily program, we've prepared a number of helpful resources to guide you on a study of Nehemiah, or any portion of the Bible for that matter. First, Insight for Living has an engaging website, so you can access Chuck's study guides and collateral resources. And second, Insight for Living also offers a wide variety of Bible study tools, books, and other resources, and any one of these choices would make the perfect gift for a loved one. To learn what's available to you today, visit us online at insight.org/store. Here's Chuck.
If you've been listening to Insight for Living for any amount of time, you know that I'm not given to needless hyperbole. I'm not a doom and gloom preacher who manipulates or tries to frighten people into the kingdom. But, and now pardon the cliche, I don't have my head in the sand either. Never in my lifetime have I been more concerned for our beloved country, whose moral backbone has grown limp. Just look back on the past year. Never before has the Ministry of Insight for Living been so needed. Never before has it been so relevant than right now. May I ask, would you be among those who provide fuel for this listener-supported ministry to accelerate our impact here at home on your station and overseas, where we're striving to make disciples in all 195 countries of the world? Talk about making your gift special. It's not only that, it is critically important today. Without question, I've never been more compelled to share the gospel and teach biblical truth than I am today. In fact, there's a passionate urgency in my heart that starts quickening on Tuesday, stirs on Wednesday, and culminates on Thursday when I spend a full day quietly alone in my study preparing to deliver my sermon Sunday morning.
Sometimes it washes over into Friday. I'm not kidding when I say that my physical anticipation for preaching is visceral. I'll keep doing the preaching part, but it's your gift that deploys Insight for Living to do this work. You have the opportunity to work alongside me to help us make a difference in our culture as we courageously present the truth every day, right there on your station and around the country and around the world while there's still time to do so. Please contact Insight for Living today to leverage and multiply your generous year-end gift. Thanks for hearing my heart. I appreciate your partnership more than you will ever know.
Thanks, Chuck. And by responding today, you can be the one who delivers the hope of Jesus to those in need. To give online, go to insight.org/donate. Or you can give a year-end gift by calling us. If you're listening in the United States, call 800-772-8888 or give online at insight.org/donate. I'm Bill Meyer. Join us again next time when Chuck Swindoll continues his study called Hand Me Another Brick on Insight for Living.
The preceding message, The Willing Unknowns, was copyrighted in 1974, 1983, 1990, 2007, and 2016. And the sound recording was copyrighted in 2016 by Charles R. Swindoll, Inc. All rights are reserved worldwide. Duplication of copyrighted material for commercial use is strictly prohibited.